KPCW News Time now, 8:17. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Peace House, celebrating its 20th anniversary, is inviting the community to its spring luncheon to celebrate its successes and to raise money for its future community campus. In the studio with me, I have Peace House Director Jane Patton, along with Development Director Ann Johnson. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Well, hard to believe, Jane, I guess that it's been 20 years. You've been there with
the organization. I've been there 11 years.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, tell us a little bit about, if you would, Peace House's beginnings. I mean, it came about after a woman, Natalie Noble, was shot in a grocery store parking lot, and the community kind of came together and started what was then known as the Domestic Peace Task Force.
That's correct. And they really wanted to figure out how they can support victims of domestic violence and keep them safe. And in 1992, the Domestic Peace Task Force became Peace House. In 1995, the shelter was completed. So this is our 20th year of having the shelter open. And there were faith leaders, community leaders. One of our speakers for this luncheon is Terry Orr. And Terry was there from the very beginning, being involved in helping to look at what a solution may be. We're still working on that solution. So it's a big mission to try to end domestic violence, but we have certainly grown in the last 20 years. And it's because of people like Terry and community leaders, faith leaders, that come together and say, this is important. We need to keep our community members safe, and we need to move in the direction of prevention also, and not just looking at the crisis.
Yeah. So that's really what Peace House has become. I mean, certainly it is the shelter, but you've done so much outreach and education, which is, I think, as you talk about it, it's kind of a cycle of violence.
It is. It's a cycle, and it will continue through the generations unless there is intervention somewhere. So that's what our goal is to naturally keep people safe when they're in crisis and they need an emergency shelter, to get them on their feet and become more self-sufficient and create independence so that they can make choices to keep them safe, them and their children safe. But if that's all that we do, we're never going to make the change to ending violence. So it is that continuation of starting with prevention with children all the way down to kindergarten, all the way up through high school into adult, and have people understand that they really can make a difference in this issue.
All right, because certainly you've got the victims with you. I mean, how is it that you're reaching out to the abusers, or you're trying to stop them before they become abusive?
Absolutely. If the intervention happens early in their life, and they aren't learning those patterns of behavior in their family life, if they realize that that's not normal and that change happens, the earlier it happens, the better. And hopefully they will not become either an abuser or a victim.
All right. So you actually work with the children of the victims. And
yes.
Spend
yes.
a lot of time mm-hmm. doing that. Well, tell us a little bit about the luncheon. It's happening next week.
Correct. Yes, it's Wednesday, May 6th. We'd like you to RSVP. It is free, but we'd like to know how much lunch to prepare. We're going to have soups and salads and breads and cheese and crackers and a cake from City Cakes. And all of this is donated because there are businesses in the community that really feel strongly about what we're doing. It begins at 11:30 and goes until 1. We do have a program that begins then at noon.
Okay. So again, it's at St. Mary's Catholic Church Social Hall there on White Pine Canyon Road. People can call what to, or they can email as well?
Right. Email us at events@peacehouse.org, or the number that you can call me directly is 658-4739, and I'm at extension 104, and we'll put you down.
All right. Well, you mentioned that it's a free lunch, but you're certainly hoping that people are going to make contributions. I mean, I think you raised a couple of grand, $20,000 last year, yeah?
We did. The community is very generous, and we do ask for a donation. Of course,
yes.
It's not mandatory, but we do ask for it.
And it is important for people to know that what is raised for this event goes toward operational costs. We're 24/7. We have a very educated and experienced staff, and it covers all of our programs, but it is operational. We're not trying to raise money yet for our new facility. That's coming in the future. That'll be a different ask. But we need to keep the quality and the extent of our services running well and running smoothly, and it does take money.
All right. So you do have the local shelter. How many people are you able to put
up?
We
are able to have up to 15 adults and children.
That includes the children, huh?
It does, yes. Ah. It's a small shelter.
Yeah,
it really is.
And the whole idea with the new community campus that you announced recently to build out at Quinn's Junction there is to build not only a shelter, but what you're calling transitional housing, that they can stay for longer than 30 days?
Yes. A transitional housing is usually 6 months to 2 years. And it is really designed to provide that extra time for people to move forward with their life, to become more independent, and then to move on and be able to become part of the community and feel safe and feel as though that they have the strength and the support.
Okay. Any idea how much you're going to need to make that happen?
We are going to need about $6 million. So it's a lot of money, but we feel as though we are going to be able to have the community get behind this.
Okay. Again, lunch is being served next Wednesday at St. Mary's Parish Hall. People can just email events@peacehouse.org if they'd like to attend.
Absolutely. And we want as many people as can possibly make it come. We keep it short so that you can come on your lunch hour. So please join us.
Okay. Basically, noon to 1 is the program. Lunch is being served starting, I think, just before that.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else?
Just one other thing, and that is we would love to have past board members, volunteers that worked with us a long time ago throughout the years, staff members, a special invitation to them. We hope that you attend. We'd like to honor you.
Okay. Hey, Jane, Ann, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:31. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Summit County Council meeting tomorrow at the County Courthouse in Colville. Closed session at 4:15. A regular meeting starting at 5:15 in the studio. To have a look at the agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council is scheduled to adopt a strategic plan. And I know this is something that you were really... that was important.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very important to organize the council and then the entire organization around something as you're moving forward into the future. And so, you know, it started off with a great discussion with the council and senior leadership about what it is the county should be concentrating on in the next few years. And then we filtered it out to our staff to get comment and have had it out to the public for the last couple of meetings on Wednesday evenings to get some comment. And now the council's ready to consider it.
So in your experience, I mean, how does a government actually implement a strategic plan so it's just not another document on a shelf?
Sure. I mean, you know, in my view, it's pretty simple. You continue to review it on a regular basis and make sure that you're accomplishing the goals that you set out for yourself. Now, that's the high level statement, but you know, we're going to organize some internal committees, a staff, in order to constantly be looking at each of these points within our strategic plan, and a regular report back to the council over the next 2 to 3 years to really measure our progress.
All right. So what do you think the highlights of the plan are?
Well, you know, certainly transportation being one of the big focuses in that. And then some of the great conversation that's gone around is economic development. And, you know, we're seeing a good economic time here in Summit County, but we still have pockets of the county that struggle. So we're going to be concentrating on that a lot. In fact, Jeff Jones, our economic development director, is starting up a program called the Ice House up in Colville in the next couple of weeks, where he's going to be working with local entrepreneurs to teach future entrepreneurs how to start a business.
Oh. Another major part of the plan, as you mentioned, is transportation. Has the county hired its transportation plan?
We are full into that process. So we've done our internal look as required by our policy to look and see if we have anybody internal. And now we're outside the organization recruiting, probably for another 2 to 3 weeks on that, and then we'll be looking at the candidates.
Yeah, the timing's interesting, though, given that Park City's just hired a transportation planner. Was there any opportunity to hire one together?
There probably is. I mean, we'll see what kind of candidates we get in as well. The candidates that they reviewed were wonderful, and you know, we'll beg, borrow, and steal if we can from that list, and probably we'll contact some of those folks.
Yeah, but I guess I'm wondering, do we really need two? I mean, for each entity?
I think we need a different focus. You know, Alfred's focus is going to be very much city-oriented and what the Park City needs for transportation planning, and of course we're much more global across the county. We've got both east and west foci. And then, you know, we're going to be working a lot with Wasatch County and Salt Lake County as well.
Yeah. What are the next steps in setting up some kind of fixed route transit, you know, any kind of rail, cable, we really need to start, I think, with park and ride lots.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's everything from the plan to environmentally clearing those projects so that they can receive federal money. I mean, it's the whole gamut of things that needs to happen. I think we really need to step back and look at the current routing that we have, especially as we get a new transit center out at Kimball Junction come in. Look at how we can enhance that in the short term out in the basin, and then look at that long term. Really 224, 248 corridor issue that we have and plan for that.
All right. Also among the goals of the strategic plan, it calls for continuing with Mountain Accord, but with exit options. What are those?
Yeah, so the you know, as we've heard over the last few weeks, a lot of public comment about certain elements of Mountain Accord, and then the overall concept of continuing participation or not. I believe council is in the spot where they want to continue and want to stay in and engage and help the Mountain Accord understand Summit County's issues. And hopefully gain from that. However, they want to be very clear and have expressed that over the last few weeks that they want a way to get out if it is not beneficial to Summit County to stay in.
Yeah, you certainly heard from Councilmember Roger Armstrong that we've been told that the Mountain Accord is a consensus-based process. Roger, though, wants some clarification about what that means.
I believe he does. And, you know, whether that's the ILA or the actual revamp of the Accord as they go into Phase 2, whether that's the appropriate place, that's really what Council is discussing right now. So they're going to be discussing that for another week. I think they're bringing it back in the first week of May.
What's your reaction to activist Rich Wyman's comments to the council, saying that, you know, the council should just vote down the canyon tunnel connections and be done with it?
Well, I mean, I think that's what some of the controversy on consensus based is. You know, so if we're in the accord, what does voting down mean, and what does a disagreement by one of the members on a certain element of the accord mean? And that's what we're trying to figure out.
All right. So does it affect Summit County at all that Wasatch County has decided not to be involved?
In peripheral talks that I've had with their manager, they're looking at how Park City and Summit County participate in the accord and represent the Wasatch back, so to speak. They feel that probably we can represent their interests just as well. That's probably pretty strong because we never want to represent each other officially. But, you know, it just didn't seem to fit with their long-term goals.
So when does the council take up the Mountain Accords interlocal agreement again?
I believe it's going to be at their May 6th meeting, if that is indeed a Wednesday. I can't remember. But it'll be the first couple of weeks of May.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit. Also, part of the strategic plan, affordable housing is mentioned. Any new solutions that you'll pursue there?
I think we're going to really push on our relationship with Mountainlands in order to really see what the council can do. And I'm not saying that that Mountain Lands hasn't done a lot of good work, because they do. What I'm saying is that we probably need to concentrate on that a little bit more in order to meet our strategic goals within the strategic plan.
Yeah. Does the county have some kind of housing authority?
We do. I mean, the Mountain Lands group is our contracted group. So what I think we need to do, we have a lot of stuff within our development agreements that say, you know, developer X, you'll build these many affordable, attainable workforce type units in your development. We just haven't seen a lot of that come into the ground yet. And so we're a little bit behind. So we might need to be a little bit more aggressive with some of the funding that we've gained over the last few years as fees in lieu of affordable housing to see what we can do to gain some units into the community.
Oh, it sounds like you need a little mini strategic plan for affordable housing.
Very well. And really, I've got our economic development director working on that. So he's going to be working closely on bringing a plan forward to the council.
Yeah, you had mentioned earlier economic development as one of the goals. What about the Boyer Tech Park? I mean, where do we stand with the change that the developers are looking for?
Well, I would say that we still don't know what the change is that we're being asked to react to. Being asked to react to with what's in the news. We haven't seen anything official, no official communication yet. From that development group in order to do an official reaction to it.
All right. Let's see. Anything new with regard to the county fair? I noticed that tickets going on sale May 1st for the Demolition Derby and the Rodeo.
Absolutely. We're very excited. I'm blanking on the exact dates of the fair right now, which is bad on the county manager. But
in August, I think.
Certainly August. And I've got the brochure in my car. I wish I would have brought it with me. But, yeah, we're really excited to have our new fair coordinator officially on board. And he's out there promoting the event and really getting ramped up for it.
Yeah, and I know something your predecessor worked on hard was finding a new location. Are we anywhere closer to moving that?
We continue on discussions about certain properties involved with that in order to make that move. You know, the council has given us direction to continue pursuing that. I think we'll probably see some movement on that in the next 6 months or so.
All right. Let's talk just a bit about the discussion the last few weeks on paying for the helicopter weed spraying program. We heard that the county is going to relook at that.
Sure. Only in the sense that we relook at all of our programs on a continual basis, certainly from a budget perspective. But, you know, we're going to have some change in leadership with a retirement in the weed program in the next couple of months. And so it's an opportunity for us and the weed board especially, who is the appointed group that really regulates our weed program, to redraft their noxious weed plan, look at how we approach that from a staffing operations standpoint, and see what they want to do in the future. I think we've got some new interesting voices on the weed board that can give us some good expertise in that and bring up some different options. But saying all that, the aerial weed sparing program has been highly successful, especially in those really hard to reach areas of our county. And you know, the bang for the buck that we see for that in controlling noxious weeds, which really have a detrimental effect on our agriculture industry, I believe will continue at least this year.
Yeah. I guess the way I understand it, though, you've got the law on your side because, I mean, people are obligated, property owners are obligated to take care of their own weeds. So couldn't you just bill them
there
for
is.
The service?
Absolutely. And we do. I mean, it's a cost share right now. I think that the policy that stands right now is that we would like to encourage landowners to take care of that problem, and that's the reason for the cost share. And in addition to that, we don't want to build a large bureaucracy around enforcing it. So if we can take the carrot approach and provide landowners an easier way to take care of that problem, it's cheaper in the long run.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't think so. I heard earlier this morning about the carbon footprint issue. I agree totally. A total call to arms on that issue of sustainability within our community.
All right, Tom. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. It's 8:45 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as part of the $5 million Georgetown University Prize Challenge, Summit Community PowerWorks has a handful of challenges going on between local organizations and schools to get residents to switch out their high-energy use incandescent light bulbs for the energy-saving LED bulbs, a competition between two local Rotary clubs recently held. In the studio with the results, I've got Mary Krista Smith. She's project manager for Summit Community PowerWorks, along with Connie Nelson from Sunrise Rotary, Candace Hart and Rachel Alde with the Lunchtime Rotary Club. Good morning to all of you.
Thank you.
Good morning,
good
morning. Leslie.
So who won?
We're happy to say the lunch crew did. But truthfully, I would say the town or everybody won. I mean, you know, anytime we can get together to have a little fun like this and, you know, do some good, that's everybody wins.
Yeah. So the challenge was between the two Rotary clubs. Do you have the final figures in terms of how many bulbs were switched out?
Yeah. Well, at least for the Lunchtime Club, you know, we had 389 light bulbs switched out, which is a lifetime savings of $87,914. So it's a pretty staggering number when you think about it, for only 389 bulbs switched out, which is great. But it seems like a pretty small number to save $87,000, really $88,000. I mean, I think that just puts it back to all of us that we should switch out some bulbs because we're all going to save some money.
Yeah, so how did Sunrise do?
Sunrise did great. We had 287 light bulbs switched out, which is a lifetime savings of $64,862. So once again, that's a lot of money for a small amount of effort.
Yeah, so how many club members does Park City?
So we have 75 active members and 22 members. So we're about 100. We have 22 semi-active. And we had six members participate in the counting of it. But we know of quite a few people that have actually done this as well, but just didn't report their numbers.
Okay. Well, so because based on this, one out of every three members changed one bulb.
Yeah. Probably worked out physically differently, but, you know, on an average, that would be correct.
Yeah, that's why I was just kind of curious. I mean, did you have widespread participation? I mean,
we actually had widespread at Park City Sunrise Rotary. We had 10 folks, but every one of those folks switched out their entire house. So someone like Jim Whitney did 97 bulbs. So, you know, some people only did six, but the majority switched out their whole house, which is quite, and including me, which is quite incredible. So it's I'm excited to see the light.
Well, and I was going to say for lunchtime, it's kind of the same thing. We had a lot of people that switched out their whole house at a time. And then I'm sure, as everybody's seen, if you've been over at Home Depot recently, I mean, it's pretty incredible when you walk in the lighting section now. I mean, a huge assortment of LED bulbs, and the prices have just plummeted. It's amazing. You can get in there and really look at doing your entire house now at a fairly reasonable price.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, you know, as a member of the SCPW Executive Board, we've been watching to find out why people are resistant to changing out bulbs. Did you get any of that feedback from your club members?
Well, I'm not sure about Sunrise, and Connie will speak to that. I think the little bit I've heard at the Lunchtime Crew was that their intention was to switch out the bulbs, but we're going to wait till a bulb had expired or, you know, had died, and then they were going to switch it out at that point. And, you know, we have actually one of our Rotary meetings this afternoon. I certainly plan on razzing and teasing a few of them, as I'm the sergeant at arms today. But, you know, I think that with the prices where they are now and the accessibility of LED bulbs, it really isn't a reason to wait. The cost has come down so much, and you save so much money when you switch out your bulbs. You really should not wait any longer and just get on it.
Yeah. Did you hear back from your club members?
I did. Only one. And that was a fellow who said his wife thought the bulbs were too bright. Well, for me, I think that's a plus. So, and I also know you can put a dimmer on those lights. So I think that would be the key. But overall, people were, you know, they were very not resistant. They were very excited to change out bulbs. I think it was just that time period. There was only, you know, 1 month for the challenge. But no, we've definitely started the trend going.
Yeah. And so, Mary Krista, I know that you helped organize this. I mean, did you ask them to save their bulbs? Because I know you've got a fundraiser coming up.
Well, I didn't know about the fundraiser at the time we initiated the challenge. But yes, the Restore and Recycle Utah will now collect all your old incandescent bulbs for our fundraiser in June 20th.
Okay, that's the Watt Shot. And it's going to be basically at the Camas Gun Club blowing up old bulbs.
Blown up old bulbs. You can bring your kids and their BB guns. It's the day before Father's Day. It's $1 a shot to raise money to replace bulbs in low-income families' homes.
Yeah. I think you also have the results from a school challenge. Do you have the ones back from Jeremy Ranch at this point?
They are giving those to me today, and I'm really excited to hear those numbers.
So that was done between grades there?
It was done between grades, and also the teachers got in on the challenge, so they are going to see if the teachers changed more bulbs or if the students changed more bulbs and who gets the pizza party. And I would also like to say that both Wileman School and Park City Day School are also in the challenge this month. So we could have incredible numbers of bulbs changed by June.
So what we found is that there are basically LED bulb exchanges for every use except for the real specialty lighting, huh?
We had a gentleman on the radio last week, and the only bulb that I think you can't change are those little tiny bud bulbs.
Halogen?
The little tiny halogen buds. But other than that, they have, through specialty lighting companies, every bulb you can imagine.
Yeah. And what about fixtures? I mean, are people, can you really just change a bulb, or do you actually have to change the fixture?
In the last 2 years, they've developed the technology you can just change your bulbs. You can plug and play, as they say. And you can adapt the fixtures. If you want to do a complete retrofit of fixtures, you could, but it's not necessary. Homes now are just changing their bulbs because it's so much less expensive than doing a complete fixture retrofit.
Right. And I know the fixtures, at least with the can lighting, I mean, those are insulated because of the hot incandescent bulb, but an LED bulb doesn't even probably need to be insulated, I would guess.
You know what's interesting, Leslie? Those cans that are in a lot of people's ceilings aren't insulated, and the LED bulb cans that you could get at the big box store actually are. So you plug up all those holes in your ceiling where you are losing heat when you change from a incandescent can to an LED can. And they actually have a rebate right now, $10 off those cans at Home Depot.
All right. Rebates are cumbersome. So what you found at Home Depot then, it's like the rebates kind of built into the price?
Yeah, I see. Ever since opening a store, I seem to be at Home Depot about every other day these days. And, so right when you walk in the front doors, you go straight ahead and on your left for, at least 40 feet is nothing but LED bulbs. They're out in the center now. And you'll find that rebates are not, like, the prices are so low now that it's really affordable.
Okay. Rachel, do you have any insight in any of this?
No, I'm just glad that we did this and that we've been helping everyone to, increase the changeover, and hopefully we'll keep going after the contest is over and keep making progress.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it. Thank you so much, Leslie.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.
KPCW News Time now, 8:53. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the North American Free Skiing and Snowboarding Championships were recently held in Grand Targhee. In the studio with me, I have Alex Lundstrom. He's the 2015 North American Free Ride Champion, along with his coach and the executive director of Team Park City United, Ryan Walsh, and Coach Todd Francis. Good morning.
Good morning.
First, congratulations to you, Alex. But let's start here with Ryan. Maybe you can just give us a little bit of background here with the championships.
Sure. Of course, you probably already know Team Park City United is a merger this year, and we've just had our inaugural season here in Park City. We've joined Park City Freestyle, Access Free Skiing, and Park City Snowboarding Team together into one group. And we've had great results here on the snow in our first season, and I'm really proud of Alex, who's won the NORAM championships in the Big Mountain program that we have.
Okay. So you were one of how many competitors?
There are around, what did you say? Like,
there's 50 in the 12 to 14 and about 50 in the 15 to 18, but that was the top 100 out of 1,200 athletes around the North American country, or North America.
Wow. So what did you have to do to get there?
So I just competed all year. I went to different comps in Alpine, Taos, and at Snowbird, and that just added up my points for the year. So there I took the top 10% of the kids that competed, and I was like 6 coming into it, I think. So, yeah.
So what did you have to do to win it?
I just had to stick my line, I guess, because that venue was throwing a lot of kids off, so a lot of kids were falling, and yeah, that's
And they came down to your last run, is that correct?
Yeah. I was in third going into the finals day, and then the two kids in front of me had a little bobble, so I just stuck my run and
you seized the moment. <That's right>.
Yeah. Grand Targhee is notorious for being really, I mean, they call it Grand Foggy sometimes, I think. I mean, did you have some nice weather, or did you have to, like, ski through fog?
Yeah, it wasn't horrible. It wasn't the worst that I've ever seen it, but it wasn't perfect conditions. But, yeah, the weather stayed all right.
So at least you could see in front of you.
Yeah, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah. Now, again, so when we talk about Big Mountain, we're talking you what? You have to hike up to a spot that's really, I mean, it's not part of the, it's kind of out of bounds, or is part of the resort that just is like some gnarly jumps and lines?
Yeah, it varies per competition and depends what resort it's at. Like over at Snowbird, it's just right off the tram, and that run is open all year. And then some resorts like Targhee, it's out of bounds, you have to wear a beacon, and a lot of times they don't open it all year because they like to keep the snow conditions good for the competition.
All right. So is it a race in terms of getting from top to bottom? I mean, is speed part of it?
Speed goes into fluidity, which is one of the criteria that they judge you in. They have five criteria. It's technique, fluidity, control, style and energy,
and then line choice, which is the difficulty of the line that the kid chooses.
Yeah. So, do you go up with them and say, line?
Yeah. So they always have an inspection day, either before the competition the morning of or the day before. So we go up with the athletes and really inspect it for safety, but also knowing each athlete's ability, we pick the line that's best for them to push their ability, but also keep them safe and ski a line that they can stick or land majority of the time.
And it's sort of a conference, you know, you kind of talk with parents, with the athlete and the coach together, sort of strategize a day's approach to a competition. You know, Alex, how are you feeling? Do you sleep well? You think you've got this feature? Do you have this trick? Do you have this grab? And they probably finalize it. How close to the start time do you think you guys got before you finalized the run and the plan?
Yeah, we have a line A and a line B, kind of depending on conditions, like you said, the fog or if it gets icier or whatever. So we always have a line A and B, but you know, it's really up to the athlete. When they feel confident about what they're doing and they know their ability, we let them pick their line and really have fun with it. It's really a creative sport, and it allows them to really showcase their skills and their athletics.
Yeah. So, I mean, how dangerous is it?
Everyone that's competing is fairly calculated. I mean, there's no one that's just going out and, I mean, there's been a few kids that have done that, but there's no one that's just going out and throwing stuff that they know they can't land. There's people pushing it and people fall eventually, but for the most part, everyone's safe. I haven't seen that many crashes at all, like, that are pretty tremendous.
Yeah. So, I mean, you kind of like huck yourself off of a cliff and, I mean, do tricks at that point too? I mean,
yeah, it depends on this year. I didn't have to do many tricks off of cliffs because everyone in the age group was just like getting grabs and stuff. But next year, I think everyone will be throwing like 360s off of stuff. And sometimes they allow inverts off of cliffs, which can get a little scary, but it's fun. So
next year they unleash you and you're allowed to jump and go upside down in a trick.
Yeah, some comps they do. Like Targhee last year, they had, they were allowing that. But
okay,
it depends on the.
Well, good luck, because you're gonna have to move up an age group, right?
Yeah.
Is that yeah?
Yeah, thanks.
Hey, Leslie, keep an eye out for Team Park City United. We're releasing our warm weather programs, and you'll be able to register very soon at teamparkcityunited.com. And we do the ramps, tramps, and camps like stuff out at the UOP.
Okay. Hey, Ryan and Todd and Alex, again, congratulations, Alex. Thanks for coming in.